Okay, the nation of Cuba, having for so many years been a mystery, embargoed into isolation with images, usually caricatures of beaches and revolutionaries. Trying to get an authentic sense of Cuban society, it's always been difficult with the travel restrictions that have been in place. Now, this has led comedian and actor Simon Palomares to document how the Cuban comedy scene shines a light on Cuban society in his documentary Latigo. And he's on the line to talk to us about this film. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Oh, excellent, excellent. Now, this is a really fascinating documentary. I think it's probably the first thing I've seen on Cuba since the Buena Vista Social Club. And
right.
You really unearthed the cultural talent of the Cuban comedy scene. Can you tell us what was it that drew you to this topic?
Well, being a comedian and having traveled around the world looking at different comedy scenes, especially in the Spanish-speaking world, I've been working in Argentina for quite a while, and I worked in Peru, Bolivia, Spain, and I was the first Spanish comedian to be invited to the Montreal Comedy Festival, I think. So the interest in how people do comedy in different countries has been a fascination of mine. And then I went to Cuba as a sort of holiday, and I ended up getting stuck without any money because the ATM machine ate my card. It was sort of a bit of a horror holiday. And then I realized when I got there that there was no Wi-Fi in Cuba and my phone didn't work. And so basically I spent at least 10 days walking around just taking thousands of photos, because you can't take a bad photo in Havana, and seeing all these posters advertising comedy shows. And I went, what do these people have to laugh about? Because, you know, I was dealing with all the bureaucracy of trying to get money sent to me in. So I decided to come back, give the place another shot, and that's when I started interviewing comedians and talking to people and seeing comedy shows. And then the third time that I went, the production was solidified through the Cuban embassy, and I was working with a production company in Havana, and that's where we got access all the way to the top sitcom in Cuba.
So, I mean, Cuba historically has been repressive of any form of criticism. It's jailed artists and journalists. Yet for several decades, the comedy scene has thrived. Now, how is it that the Cuban comedy has been able to tackle issues that haven't really been able to be discussed in other open forums?
Well, I don't think that they're discussing anything that's not allowed. They've got a line that says, you can criticize the government, but you can't ridicule the government, which I really took with me from that experience, which coming back home and then, of course, seeing the way, for example, the last 4 years of American politics have been completely lampooned with Donald Trump by three or four Tonight shows every night and Saturday Night Live and all that sort of thing. And then I wonder, so this is just a basically roller coaster of ridicule. But is it having any effect on anything? Because at the end of the day, 70 million people voted for Donald Trump again. It's almost like, if anything, the whole thing was just so ridiculous that there was no stopping it. And so in a sense, I've walked away with the feeling that what they were doing in Cuba was actually, and I love these phrases, they were laughing at the things that are not well done. And trying to demand a sense of decency about the place. So basically the things that they laugh about is the hardships of Cuba. The fact that you can only get two things at one time in the supermarket, oil and toothpaste. And yet at the same time, because the country is opening up, you're watching MasterChef, where they're sitting there saying, if you want to make this at home, all you do is get these 27 ingredients. And people are going, where on earth am I going to get sesame oil in Havana, you know, that sort of thing. So it's sort of like the ridiculous moment that life is there at the moment.
I mean, it's interesting that the documentary talks about what's known in Cuba as the special period, and this was the period of real wide-scale privation where, following the collapse of Soviet Union, Cuba was very much left alone. It's fascinating just how much those experiences really translate into comedy, and how comedy was important during a period where, you know, people were just looking for the very basic necessities to survive.
Well, at that point, when the Berlin Wall collapsed and basically the only lifeline they had was cut, things like, for example, coal to run the power stations disappeared. So there were all these blackouts all over Cuba. So all the comedians talk about, you always had to carry a cigarette lighter in your pocket when you were on stage, because at any point the lights would go out and you'd be standing on stage in the dark. And you had to get out the cigarette lighter and finish off doing your set, you know, with the light of the cigarette lighter. And, you know, and then, of course, the government, you know, like all governments everywhere, they come out with these absolute turns of phrases and they called it the special period. And like they say, there was nothing special about it.
But I also found fascinating, I mean, all that hardship, there's also the really fascinating aspect of the sort of do-it-yourself nature of Cuban culture. You source the, like, the sourcing of the 1952 spark plugs for the old vehicles, and also the package, these sort of settlers, same as data, sort of smuggled in pirated programs so that people can see a sort of broader sort of portrait lens than the state television.
Singularly the most organized thing in Cuba. Nothing works in Cuba better than the pirated television shows, to the point that the government itself actually started its own pirated version of it. There's a 25-year-old guy somewhere in Havana, and he has got a water tank on top of his building, and inside the water tank there is a satellite dish, and this guy pirates it. Just basically anything that comes outside of Cuba, he basically has got it the next day. And he puts a package of programs every week, and that USB gets sent out throughout the country. So it's like hand-to-hand Netflix, really. To the point that it's so popular that the government had to bring out its own version called the Backpack, you know, with its own package of boring propaganda programs to compete with it.
So what is Cuban television actually like? I mean, is this popular sitcom that you are talking about, Living by Your Wits? Is that actually on state television, or is that...
That's on state television. And we got access to that sitcom, which is literally the sitcom that stops the nation every Monday night. And what it is just basically four old guys sitting around a table playing dominoes, bitching about life. And in that, what they complain about everything that is going wrong that week. And in saying that, the whole country basically sits down and watches, mums and dads and grandparents all watch this, because they all share the same complaints the week that they haven't got chicken, or the week that they haven't got olive oil, or the week that there are blackouts in some part of Cuba. And they all get together. And that has actually given a voice to all the complaints, to the point that Castro used to demand a copy of the show the next day and tell his ministers to watch the show, because that's where they were going to learn what was going on in the streets.
Cuba being very much isolated for so long, is the comedy, you know, it seems to be very, very localized. How does it translate when it's Cuban comedians formed overseas? Has there been?
Well, there's actually a lot of comedians that then the lady in the documentary, Cookie LaMosa, that she's now living in Miami. And then, of course, there's Iván Carmejo, the really well-spoken comedian, the Cuban comedian who lives in Miami. And he goes back and forth, you know, into Cuba whenever he feels like. There's quite a bit of movement going on. It was a bit more restricted during the Trump era. The comedians were doing these jokes about Trump and how can you put an embargo on an embargo, right? How can you close off, you know, because Trump made this huge announcement about he was closing off Cuba to the United States, and people are going, it's been closed for 60 years. What exactly are you going to close now? You know, I think he stopped, basically, I think the only effect it had was that he stopped, you know, cruise ships going there, which affected the people who lived off the tourism, the streets around Havana, and that was about it. When they go out, you know, they also, you know, there's also an audience of Cubans around the world, and of the fact that Barack Obama appeared on that sitcom, put that sitcom on the map. The White House demanded that Obama appeared on that sitcom because they knew that by appearing on that sitcom, they would reach all 11 million Cubans, much more than doing anything on state television.
Now, you talked about in the document sort of how comedy is based around the sort of the things that need to be done better in Cuba, and one of them does seem to be gender in comedy. You notice that you sort of discussed the sort of lack of female comedians, or
yeah, funny that.
I mean, I'm not certainly still. I mean, stand-up comedian in Australia still is cool. It certainly has
that,
been.
That is where Cuba. Well, that's where Cuba is not exactly an island. That's where they share that with so many places around the world. So they kept telling me that, oh, there's so many women in comedy, and I kept saying, okay, well, I'd like to interview them. But the women that we did have on talked very well about what it was to be, well, what it was like to be a woman in Cuba, and what it was like to be a woman in Cuban comedy, which was also interesting. But it's the old thing of like every, most comedy scenes around the world. The only place that I've seen where there is almost like an even balance between men and women in comedy is Argentina, Buenos Aires. Mm. But everywhere else, you know, there's such a difference between the number of men and the number of women doing comedy. It's just it seems to be a worldwide issue that needs to be rectified.
Finally, I mean, do you see things like, say, like Cuba slowly getting the internet, and you know, hopefully a slow opening up of international relations? Do you see this changing the Cuban comedian scene, or how do you see it
every time I would go back to Cuba, there would be new changes. So the last time I was there, they had a new phone coverage, or there was a new line of taxis, or you know, a new shop. Or a new hotel that had gone up. And the other thing with Cubans is they can actually see how Wi-Fi is going to change their society, which is something that we didn't have. We didn't know how much of an effect Wi-Fi would have on us before we got Wi-Fi. And they can see the difference between you know, talking to people in Cuba and talking to people in Miami. It's day and night because they are so connected to you in a conversation. Right, and their attention span is you know, so much longer than when you're talking to people in Miami, and they can see that, you know, that's going to change the way they relate to each other. There was a show called Until Wi-Fi Does Us Part, which is, you know, talking about how the Wi-Fi was already changing the way Cuban society works, and So of course, the comedy will change because, you know, they will reflect and make jokes about everything new that, you know, that's to happen.
And also, you talk about a little bit like about the sort of idea of time, how the sort of conception of time is different in Cuba.
Mm. I find it fascinating. Having finished the documentary about a year and a half ago, which is when, and then of course it had to be shelved because the Spanish Film Festival had to be cancelled last year, and of course, you know, you come back and you are doing a documentary about a country where they've got empty shelves in the supermarket and so on, and of course, you know, a couple of months later, your local Coles has run out of toilet paper, and you know, you've seen the same things here, and also we have to sit at home and basically look at each other for months on end like we did in Melbourne. And suddenly, you know, we've got a different sense of time, and we're not rushing around, and we haven't got somewhere to be in half an hour, and suddenly the our view of time, it's really interesting that speech that Bob Commons, the comedian who actually lives in Madrid but actually wants to go back to Cuba, because he actually misses that, you know, that lifestyle in Cuba and that way of being. It's something that, you know, in a way, the whole world has learned since that interview was filmed. The idea of time.